certainly appreciate the prayer and ask, as always, that you pray for me continually as I stand before you. In the third chapter of Ecclesiastes, Solomon writes in verse 1, "To everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under the heaven." And he begins listing several times and several seasons, obviously, that many of us are familiar with this morning. And of course, one of the main purposes of Solomon writing this, I believe, is to instruct us that nothing stays the same forever. To everything, there's a time and season. There are certain things that just continually change in life. In fact, most things, if not everything, continues to change in our lives. Nothing stays the same forever. You know, we're coming up on a change of season here. In fact, the calendar already says it's springtime. I'm not quite convinced yet that it's springtime, but we've had this change of season take place in a natural sense. We're looking forward to putting off some of the effects of winter and having blue skies and warmth and the singing of the birds and everything that comes with springtime and summer and the warmth that comes from the wonderful sunshine. So nothing stays the same forever, even in this natural world, and the seasons come and go, the seasons change. But in our lives, seasons change as well. There are seasons of life that we go through, certainly seasons of joy and seasons of disappointment, but there are seasons of age as well, right? We have a season of youth, we have a season of middle-agedness, and we have a season of old age, if you will. And that's certainly something that I'm becoming more and more aware of as time goes on. There's certainly no stopping the clock. There's no turning it backwards. There's nothing that you can do to stop time. As one writer said, time is the only army that has always marched on. There's just nothing you can do about it. I look in the mirror and I see more and more gray hairs every day. I see my daughter getting bigger. I see the sunrise every morning. I see the sunset every night. And it's just becoming more and more aware to me, or known to me, that there's nothing I can do to stop these seasons of life that we go through. But some look at these different seasons that Solomon has written about, and they'll say, well, Solomon here is, in a way, telling us that these times and these seasons have been preordained or predetermined by God. Now, of course, I think we understand that that's not the case this morning, that God has not set necessarily a time to be born and a time to die, a time to laugh and a time to mourn. He's not prescribed or predetermined all these times and seasons in our life. And one thing that becomes abundantly clear, or makes that abundantly clear, is verse 7 when he says that there's a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. Now that's what I want to focus on this morning, verse 7, that one expression where he says that there's a time to keep silence. You say, well, Brother Nathan, how does that make it clear that the Lord hasn't predetermined all these times and all these seasons? Well, as I look at that and I ponder on that, Solomon didn't stop there. He says that there's a time when people ought to keep silent, particularly the children of God, but that's not the end of the story. If it was something that God had preordained or predetermined, that would be it. There would be a time to keep silent, and when we kept silent, we would just say that's the Lord wanting us to be silent. But Solomon would go on in many places in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and tell us when we ought to keep silent. Many other Bible writers, under the direction and influence of the Holy Ghost, would tell the children of God when it's a good and proper time for them to keep their mouths closed and keep some control over their tongue. When to keep silent, if you will. Now, you know, that's something that's not easy to do, is it? It's not easy to remain silent. You know, as I go through life, there are many times I just want to let some words fly. Somebody crosses me the wrong way and I want to give them a piece of my mind. Or maybe somebody's not mistreated me, or I've thought they've mistreated me, but I just want to give my opinion on a matter. I just want to let it be known how I feel about a certain situation. And it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. In fact, it's probably one of the hardest things to do, is to keep silent. But understand this morning, dear friends, that our words can do a lot of harm. Our words can harm us. Our words can harm others. Our words can take glory and honor away from God. In fact, it's impossible, if I can say that this morning, it's impossible to unsay something that's been said. I think that goes without saying this morning. But as you think about words and the harm that words can have, understand this morning that once you say something, you can't take it back. There's no way that you can unsay something that's been said. Now, you can ask for forgiveness to the person perhaps that you're speaking to, and certainly that person should forgive you, I believe, but that doesn't mean that that person's necessarily going to forget what's been said. They may forgive you, they may not hold it against you, but they can't really necessarily just take it out of their mind. It's impossible to unsay something once it's been said. That's like unringing a bell that's been rung. Or I saw one illustration that I thought was just spot on. It said it's like putting toothpaste back in a tube. It's impossible to put toothpaste back in a tube, isn't it? You know, you squeeze it out and you make a mess. Well, there are things you can do. You can try to clean up the mess, can't you? You can buy more toothpaste, but you're never going to put that same toothpaste back in the tube that it came out of. And so it is with the words that come out of our mouths. There's nothing you can do. Once they come out, they're out. They can't be unsaid. You can try to clean it up the best you can. You can try to, again, ask for forgiveness and say, I'm sorry, a million times over. You can just go out of your way to ask for forgiveness. But at the end of the day, you can't put those words back in your mouth. You can't put the tube or the toothpaste back in the tube. And so, again, we need to understand the seriousness of that this morning. That's kind of frightening to me. As I begin to ponder on that, almost makes me want to go around with some duct tape over my mouth and say, I don't want to say anything to anybody ever again. I just want to be silent because I don't want to cause them harm. I don't want to cause myself harm. And I certainly don't want to take glory and honor away from God. It's a very frightening and a very serious matter. You know, Solomon, again, in the book of Proverbs, chapter 15 and verse 4, he says that the perverseness of the tongue is as a breach in spirit. You know, that's a breach not only in our own spirit and how words can be a hindrance to us in our own lives, but I think principally Solomon's talking about breaching somebody else's spirit. You know, somebody is just full of joy and peace and contentment in this life, and then we come around with our harsh and our negative words as swords, and it's just like popping a balloon. We just deflate them, and we take all the goodness and the joy from their life. That's what Solomon says. We can be a breach in someone else's spirit. And also we find Solomon would write in the 11th chapter of Proverbs in verse 9 that a hypocrite through his mouth destroyeth his neighbor. Understand that again this morning. We're talking about some very serious things. He's not talking about a light injury. You just kind of harm them. You just kind of maim them. He's saying you destroy them. That's a point of desolation. That's a total and complete desolation, if you will. And so again, we need to understand the seriousness and the implications of the words that we speak. And it's no wonder that Solomon very wisely wrote, there's a time to keep silent. You say, well, Brother Nathan, I want to keep silent. I don't want to injure somebody else. I don't want to injure myself. I don't want to take glory from God. When should I keep silent? Because he says there's a time to speak. So obviously, as he said, there's a time to speak. But when do I need to be silent? Dear friends, there's many, many scenarios that are presented in the Bible, and we can't begin to cover all those this morning. So go home and study on this topic some more. But this morning, if the Lord would bless me for just a few more minutes, I'd like to look at six times when the children of God should be silent. Six times when the children of God should be silent. And the first one that I'll mention is when you're in the presence or among the wicked. The children of God should be silent when they're among the wicked. David says in the 39th Psalm and verse 1 that I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. So David, again, very plainly saying, I don't want to speak, I don't want to say a lot when I'm in the presence of the wicked. Now that could be because he's saying while they're persecuting me, while they're afflicting me, while they're doing all this harm to me, I'm going to keep quiet, I'm going to keep calm, I'm going to keep focused on the Lord. That could be one thing that he means particularly. But more than that, I think David is probably saying, I don't want to give the wicked any reason to think less of God or to think less of my faith in God. I don't want to give them any reason to drag myself and God down, if you will. I don't want to give them any reason to blaspheme God or to make light of God or His person or His attributes. I think that's probably part of what David is saying. When I'm in the presence of the wicked, I don't want to have or give them any reason that they might think less of my God. You know, what wicked people want to do, what they tend to do, is drag you down and drag God down too. Wicked people want to promote themselves. Wicked people want to think that they're the smartest people in the room. They want to think that they're the most learned, that they have the most advantageous positions. They want to think, again, that they're just the best of the best. And so in order to do that, a wicked person is going to drag you down and drag God down as well. Now, of course, we should strive to not be around the wicked. That should not be a desire of ours to be among the wicked. We should obviously have some discernment in the company that we keep in this life. But sometimes we might be like David and we just can't help it. We just can't avoid situations of life. And sometimes we might be forced to keep company or be around wicked individuals. But when you're around them and you're talking to them, I believe, again, part of what David has in mind is that everything he says is going to be critiqued, is going to be inspected, and again, be pried into so that they can just find a crack in order, again, to drag you down and drag God down, drag your faith in God down. They're going to look for contradictions in what you say and what your faith is, perhaps. You say, Brother Nathan, give me an example of that. Well, I'm guilty of this. I have said some things in my life that I regret. And I have been around probably some wicked individuals, and they'll say something like this. Well, I thought you were a Christian. I thought that you were a Christian. I thought you believed in God. That doesn't sound like something somebody believes in God would say. That doesn't sound like something a Christian would say. You see, what they're doing is they're saying, you know, you're really not living up to your faith. You're really not living up what you claim to be. So why don't you just kind of throw that off and come down to my level? Why don't you just be polluted in your words and in your actions? You know, you're really not living as a Christian. You're not saying things that a Christian would say. So just kind of forget it. They're again looking for contradictions so that they can kind of pry it open, if you will, and again bring you and the Lord down with them. But you know, that's not what a righteous person would do, I don't believe. You say something you ought not say around a righteous person, usually they'll say, oh, brother, you shouldn't say that. You shouldn't do that, you know. It's different than somebody say, well, that's not Christian. I thought you were a Christian. There's a difference in that. Or maybe you'll say something to where you're going through a struggle in life. You're facing different circumstances of life. And you'll just share this thought, this passing and fleeting thought that would make it seem as though you doubt the capability of the Lord. And they'll say, well, it doesn't seem like God's really helping you. It doesn't really seem like God's always cracked up to be. And again, they're trying to bring you down. They're trying to bring your faith and the Lord down. And so David, he didn't want that to happen. David didn't want to be in that situation. David didn't want to give them any reason to bring himself down or to blaspheme God, to make light of God, as I said, and think less of God as they might think towards and compared to their heathen gods, if you will. And he says, you know what? When I'm around the wicked, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. I'm just going to say as few words as possible. When I'm among the wicked, I'm going to bridle my tongue and hope that the Lord will strengthen me during that time. So that's one situation, perhaps, when children of God ought to be silent. There's a time to keep silent. I believe one of those times is when you're in the presence of the wicked. Another time that we ought to keep silent as we go through this life is when we don't have all the facts, when we don't know all of the situation, when we're jumping to conclusions, if you will, or interrupting somebody as they're trying to tell us something. You know, that's one of my biggest shortcomings in life. I'll admit to you that this morning. That is one of my biggest shortcomings. I jump to conclusions all the time. I interrupt people while they're thinking. I interject my thoughts and my opinions before they've got out what they want to say. Or maybe they finish saying it, and before I've even had time to think about it, I go ahead and give an opinion on the matter. Well, notice what Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 13. He said that he that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is a folly and a shame unto him. So that's another time when we ought to keep silent. When we don't have all the facts, we're interrupting the person before they finish. You know, nothing causes, let me say this morning, nothing causes more damage than somebody going around and telling somebody something that they heard three or four times removed through the grapevine when they don't have all the facts. Nothing causes more damage than that. Than go around saying, oh, you know what I heard? Oh, I heard this and that. And yet they're so off base, they don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. They don't have all the facts. And Solomon says, it's in times like that, that's a time to keep silent. Don't be going around spreading things, gossiping and backbiting and whispering. Don't go around doing all those things when you don't have all the facts. Just keep it to yourself. You shouldn't be going around talking like that. Or, as I said, when somebody's speaking to you and they haven't finished their thought, they haven't finished what they're going to say. And number one, that's kind of rude. But number two, you're not going to have much wisdom on the matter, are you? He says it's a folly and a shame unto you. I'll liken it to this. Answering somebody or giving an answer for something before you even know the question or before you've heard the matter, that's like probably answering an essay question before you've read the question. Isn't that? I mean, it's not like multiple choice. Multiple choice, you might have 1 in 25% chance. Essay, you're not even going to have a shot of getting it right because you haven't read the question fully. And that's something that I know at least I need to work on. I need to keep silent when people are talking to me and wait till I have all the facts that are presented to me. Now, that's, again, something I struggle with. My wife can attest to that. I can't tell you how many times we'll be sitting at the table and she'll start talking and I'll go ahead and say something and she'll say, Nathan, you interrupted me. Nathan, I don't think what you said is applicable because that's not even the question I was going to ask. But you know, we're all probably guilty of that from time to time. That's a time to keep silent. There's a time to hear and there's a time to speak. There's a time to keep silent, a time to speak. We ought to listen and make sure that we've gotten all the facts as they are presented to us. Another time we ought to keep silent, perhaps, in this life is when we're tempted to make light of God or tempted to make light of holy things. You know, Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 9 that fools make a mock of sin. You know what that means is fools, they joke about sin. They forget the seriousness of sin. They just, again, laugh and joke about the seriousness of sin. But we don't want to fall in that group of people. We don't want to be speaking when we should be silent about the seriousness of sin. Sin is a very serious matter. It's something that can destroy our lives here. It's something that can destroy other people's lives. It's something that can separate us from God in a fellowship sense here in this life. We understand that we can't be separated eternally, that Christ died for us, and that there's nothing that can remove us from that work of Christ. But sin is a very serious matter here. And certainly we don't want to go around making light of it in this life, joking about sin in this life. Not only in our own lives, but maybe in the lives of others. I've been around some individuals, and I guess they thought they were pretty big stuff. They thought they were some pretty mature Christians, if you will. And they would say things like, oh, I can't believe this person would sin like that. I can't believe that person would do, how could they do something like that? And it's almost like, you know, they're just making light of it, if you will. Making light of the other person's struggle in this life. You know, we all have sins that easily beset us in this life. We all have struggles that we deal with in this life. And we shouldn't go around making light of sin in our own lives or making light of the sin in the lives of others. We shouldn't, again, be making light of that or anything that is holy and just as it pertains to God. Solomon says again, in Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 24, to put away from thee a froward mouth and a perverse lip. You know what that is? That's speaking about anything that is contrary to God. If you're ever tempted to say something against God, against God's nature, against the attributes of God, against the works of God, if you're ever tempted to say anything like that, don't. Don't say it. Keep silent. That's the best time to be silent, is if you think, oh, well, I'm just going to say this one thing against God. I'm just going to make light of this one thing. Don't do it, dear friends. That's a time to keep silent. Sometimes we might go through circumstances in life. Sometimes we might be facing whatever the case may be, and it just feels right at the time to say something against God, to curse God, if you will. Isn't that what Job's wife wanted him to do? There she was seeing her husband go through all these things, and she says, just curse God and die. You know, it seemed right and proper to her at that time to do that. Don't do it, dear friends. Don't get involved with that. Be silent when you have a temptation to speak against God. Solomon again writes in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 2, be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. Why? For God is in heaven, and thou upon the earth. Therefore, let thy words be few. You know, we don't understand some of the things that happen in our life. We don't understand some of the workings of God. We don't understand God to perfection, as sometimes we make out like we do. And so never be tempted, or I should say, even though we may be tempted, never go through with the temptation to speak against God, but rather let thy words be few. And we sang that song this morning, God moves in a mysterious way. I love that line in there where it says that God is his own interpreter and he will make it plain. Sometimes we're tempted to say, God, I can't believe you'd let this happen. God, why this and why that? Oh, God, I just can't believe it. No, it's in times like that we need to be silent. We need to not be hasty in our words toward the Creator. We're just specks of dust. We're just worms of the earth. We don't understand everything that happens in the mind of God and why things might have occurred or might not have occurred. And so it's in times like that again, let thy words be few. That's what Solomon says. There's a time to speak. There's a time to be silent. When you're tempted to speak against the Lord, that's not a time to speak. That's a time to be silent. There's another time to be silent in our lives, and that's when perhaps we might say something that would offend a weaker brother. A weaker brother. You know, in the life of Christian discipleship, there is to be growth. We understand that this morning, that there is to be a growth and a progression in the life of a disciple. And that's something that takes time. That's something that just doesn't happen overnight. It takes time to grow and mature as a follower of the Lord to where we can not only perhaps understand some of the more deeper and more complex questions of theology, but just with circumstances of life in general. It takes time to mature that we might face those circumstances of life as we should. And I believe that's probably one of the wonderful reasons why the Lord has set up the church the way he has, that there would be older with the younger, that the older might be an example to the younger, that the mature would be able to help out those that have not quite matured in the faith and in the understanding of God. And so it's a wonderful thing to be silent when what you might say would affect negatively one of the weaker among us. It might be perhaps that you would offend them. It might be perhaps that you would lead them astray. Here's what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 8 in verse 11. He poses the question, and through thy knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. Now notice that. He's asking, are we in our speech and our behavior, Are we going to be the reason why another brother perishes for whom Christ died? Now, that's not talking about an eternal perishing. We understand that, I think, this morning. That if Christ died for that person, they will be in heaven with Christ. Because our home in heaven is not based on our righteousness. It's based on the righteousness of Christ. We understand that he's not talking about an eternal perishing. But again, he's talking about a perishing here in this life, to where they would have the joy and the peace and the contentment taken from them, where they might be led astray into false doctrine, where they would have whatever truth they had understood for a while stripped from them, that they might be again led away from the Lord. The Apostle Paul is saying it's in times when you're around the weak brethren, particularly, that you ought to watch what you say. You ought to watch what you do. You ought to watch what you say, lest you offend them and lead them astray. You know, in Acts chapter 20 and verse 30, he talks about this again there when it says, through our speech, through our mouths, that we of our own selves would lead disciples away from Christ. You know, it's a very possible situation to where we say the wrong thing, and because of our words and actions, they take the first exit, if you will, and they're no longer following after the Lord. That's something that I certainly would never want to be responsible for. And so the Apostle Paul is trying to help us in that situation and say, be careful what you say, especially around the weak brethren. Now, we should never have two classes of conversation, should we? We should never be double-tongued, if you will, and have one set of conversation around these individuals and one set of conversation around these individuals over here. We should always strive to be the same in our conversation with every man, not be double-tongued, as the Apostle Paul would refer to in his writing to Timothy, not be double-tongued, talking to some one way and talking to some another. We should talk to everybody the same. And so we should be on guard at all times, but especially we should be on guard around the weak brethren. Again, we don't want to say anything that would hinder them in their growth or hinder them in their walk and path of discipleship. I don't know what the situation might be or what you might say in those times, but just remember, what you say affects not only you, but it also affects the lives of others. So we ought to be silent, particularly, and have on guard things we say around the weaker brethren. There's another time to be silent, and that is when our speaking would damage a good relationship. If what you're about to say is going to damage a good relationship, then don't say it. Just forget it. Just put it on the back burner, put it out of your mind, and forget you ever even wanted to say it. Now, I put that clarification in there about a good relationship, because there are some relationships we probably ought to stay away from. And there are some relationships that we probably should sever as far as our friends and the people that they might hang around with. We ought to try the very best we can to look out for our friends and our brethren in this life. And so there, again, are relationships there where maybe we ought to try to sever that in the service of friendship. You know, I was reminded of the movie Pride and Prejudice. You ever seen that movie, Pride and Prejudice? Well, there's a part of the story in there where Mr. Darcy breaks up the relationship between Jane Bennett and Mr. Bingley. And as he's writing to Elizabeth Bennett, the sister of Jane, as Mr. Darcy's writing to her, he's saying, I did it, and I shouldn't have done it, but I did it in the service of a friend. You know, that's a very poetic line, if you will. But there are some things perhaps we should do in the service of a friend. Some things that we just don't like to do, but they have to be done. Solomon says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. We ought to look out for our friends and our brethren again. But we're not talking about relationships that should be severed. We're not talking about interfering with relationships when we see our friends and our brethren going off with the wrong crowd and the wrong group of people. We're talking about good and wholesome relationships. It's in times like that that we ought to be silent if what we say would hinder that relationship. Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 28 that a froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. Now, again, there's a general admonition throughout the pages of Scripture, as you'll see, against whispering, against backbiting, against gossiping and slandering. Certainly, we don't want to ever fall into that group of people. But principally here, we see what happens if we do whisper. He's saying if you're speaking when you should be silent, you're going to separate chief friends. Again, I look back at my life and I can probably see some times where I've been guilty of that, and I can see some times where I've been the victim of that. You say, Brother Nathan, you're playing the victim card this morning. Yeah, I'll play it if I can play it. I believe there have been times when I've been the victim of this. People, for whatever reason, have gotten a bee in their bonnet and they've wanted to go around and talk about me behind my back, and they'll just begin to separate people that I thought were my most dearest friends in this life. They go around talking, and before you know it, those that were once my friends are no longer my friends. I think I've experienced that in my own life, and it's not something pleasant. It's not something that any of us should have to go through in this life. If somebody has a problem with me, I hope they'll come and talk to me to my face. I hope they'll come and address that matter with me, than rather go and talk to my friends about me. People would save themselves so much time and energy and distress and difficulty in life if they just follow the biblical model. To go to the person that they have an issue with. To go to them and them alone and talk about that. Things would be so much smoother in this life, especially in the church, if people would just do what the Lord asked them to do. If you got a problem with somebody, go talk to that person and that person alone. Not just for church members. I have found that's something that works well even in the secular world. If you have issues with coworkers, if you have issues with your boss, if you have issues with your neighbor, it doesn't matter. I've found that has worked wonderfully. That if you have an issue with somebody, you go tell that person. Don't go talk to their friends and tell their friends what evil and terrible things that person is doing, because what you're going to do is you're going to separate the chiefest of friends. There's a time to keep silent. And if what you're about to say would ruin that friendship, don't say it. Just forget you ever wanted to say it. Put it out of your mind. That's not the time to speak. But rather, again, I think people would be so much better off if they just follow the biblical commands to go to those people individually. Then we find perhaps another time to be silent this morning. And this is the last one I'll deal with today. Again, there are many, many scenarios that you can find in the Bible as to when we should be silent. But I'll end with this one, and this is perhaps one that all the others stem from. In fact, I know it's one from which all the others stem from. And that is, we should be silent if what we're about to say is something that would tarnish the reputation of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. If the words you're about to utter is something that he himself would never have said, then you should not let those words come out of your mouth. And that's a very simple rule, a very hard rule to implement and to follow in this life. But if it's going to rob God and Christ of their glory and their honor, if it's going to rob Christ and tarnish his reputation, don't say it. Don't say it. You know, everything we do in this life should be for the honor and glory of God. Should it not be? As followers of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, everything we do, everything of every second of every day, ought to be done for his honor and his glory. And it ought to be done in a fashion that would live up to the example that he's given to us. Christ is our example. You believe that this morning? That Christ is our example in everything? Well, if you believe that, that's wonderful. If you don't believe it, let me tell you that's the case. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21. He says that Christ has left behind us, for us, an example that we should follow in his steps. And you know what? Then Peter, after he says Christ is our wonderful example, he goes on to talk about the speech of Jesus Christ. He said there was no guile found in his mouth. Neither when he was reviled did he revile again. Neither when he suffered did he threaten. That should be us in our lives and everything, looking to Jesus Christ as our example, making sure, again, there's no guile in our mouth. That's profanity. That's cursings, if you will. That's speaking against the Lord. None of those things or immoral words should ever flow from our mouths. Do they? Yes, they do. Lord, help us that they wouldn't. Because again, it can harm us, it can harm others, and it's robbing Christ of His glory. We should be looking to Him as our example. Again, having no guile found in our mouth or flowing from our lips. To when we're reviled, when we're mocked, when people would say all manner of evil against us. When they would just, again, persecute us and afflict us sore. Do we revile again? Do we pay them like for like? No, that's not what our Lord did. He never answered with harsh words. He never answered with unkind words. He on occasion would put truth into His answers if He felt a need to respond. But never were His responses out of anger or rashness. Or certainly when He suffered at the hands of cruel and wicked men. He didn't threaten them. He didn't turn that occasion into a soapbox to where He would have this grand threatening and say, just wait. Just wait till what happens to you. No. He didn't do that. But as our example, we need to be looking to Him. If it's, again, something that Jesus Christ would not say, we shouldn't say it in our lives either. Because, again, to do so would rob God of His glory and His honor and tarnish His reputation. And so words, they can certainly be very damaging. And that's why Solomon, no doubt, spent so much time talking about the words that we'd speak. That's no doubt why the other Bible writers would spend so much time saying, be careful what you say. It's something that we should take very seriously. Something that can damage many situations in our life. And destroy our neighbors and our friends. And far too often we leave words that have been spoken. Far too often, let me say it this way, far too often we don't leave words unspoken. I think I got that right. Far too often we don't leave words unspoken. We just, for whatever reason, decide that this is a proper time to speak when it's actually not. We don't have the knowledge and the wisdom that we need to discern when to speak and when not to speak. Certainly that's something that we need to pray to the Lord for. Lord, give me the knowledge and the wisdom that I would have the discernment to keep silent when I need to keep silent. You know, Solomon says again in Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 27 that he that hath knowledge spareth his words. Do you catch that? A person that knows a little bit about what's going on, he doesn't say a lot. He spareth his words. Sometimes in my life, I've come across quiet people. And I'll kind of tease them about being quiet. I'll say, well, when are you going to get around to talking one of these days? Sometimes I'll make light of a quiet person. But maybe I ought to be quiet more often. Maybe I ought to be a man of few words. Solomon says, if you're a man of knowledge, you're a man that spares your words. Now I'll leave you with a couple of other thoughts that you might see the seriousness of this matter. Again, we look to the writings of Solomon. He says that death and life are in the tongue. And whoso keepeth his mouth, that is, has control over his mouth, whoso keepeth his mouth saveth his soul from troubles. You got enough troubles today. I got enough troubles to worry about. I don't need to heap more troubles on myself. I've got enough on my plate to worry about. Solomon says, you probably got enough to worry about too. And in order to prevent more troubles from being put on you, keep your mouth. That is, have some control over the things that you say. May the Lord bless us as we go forward again to give us the knowledge and the wisdom that we need to discern these times that Solomon writes about, a time to be silent and a time to speak. And certainly give us the strength when we do have the knowledge. Sometimes having the knowledge and the wisdom isn't everything. Sometimes we need the strength. Lord, give me the strength to be silent. May the Lord bless you is my prayer. Let's stand and sing a hymn this morning. How about number 154?